This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Uplift Desk. In today's work environment, it's essential to find balance and promote well-being, and Uplift Desk is here to make that a reality. With a focus on ergonomics and innovative design, Uplift Desk offers standing desks that not only encourage healthier work habits, but also enhance your overall productivity. Each desk is built with unmatched stability and quality, ensuring that your workspace is both dynamic and durable. The beauty of Uplift Desk lies in its extensive customization options, allowing you to select from a vast array of desktops and accessories to fit your specific work needs and aesthetic preferences. Additionally, Uplift Desk is committed to customer satisfaction, offering fast shipping, free returns, and a 15-year warranty. Transform your office and your health by visiting UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting for 5% off your order. That's UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your entire order. With Uplift Desk, you're not just investing in a piece of furniture, you're investing in a healthier, more productive future. Again, go to UpliftDesk.com/timecrafting to get 5% off your order today.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I'm Mike Vardy, and I'm about to have a productive conversation with Ian Morgan Cron. Welcome to A Productive Conversation. I'm back with an episode from The Vault that is from 2022. And I'm actually really excited about bringing this one back out of the vault already, because even though it just took place a couple of years ago, March 2022 to be precise, it's one that I got a lot out of. There's some surprises in there. As somebody who's fascinated with the Enneagram, I got plenty out of it because I went to someone who knows a lot about this. That's Ian Morgan Cron. We talked about his book, The Story of You. And during the conversation, Ian explains each type's negative passion and how embracing virtues like serenity can help us from overcoming limiting behaviors. I think about my own number, so we discuss that. That even gets revealed in this episode. There's so much that I enjoyed about this conversation, which is why I'm bringing it back to the fore as an episode from The Vault this month. So without further ado, here's my conversation from March of 2022, back out of The Vault for this episode only, Ian Morgan Cron here on A Productive Conversation. Enjoy. Ian, thank you so much for taking the time to join me on the program today.
It's a delight. Thank you.
So as I mentioned to you before we hit the record button, this is a conversation I've been wanting to have for a while. And now that the book, The Story of You, An Enneagram Journey to Becoming Your True Self is out, and I had the opportunity to have this conversation, I'm like, oh, good, because I also have your previous, and I showed this to you, I have The Road Back to You as well, An Enneagram Journey to Self-Discovery. And I want to dig into this a bit because people, I'm a frameworks kind of person. I do like frameworks. I think frameworks foster freedom because they give you kind of this, as long as there's some flexibility and so on and so forth, and you can read between the lines a bit and they're not too restrictive, I think that they can be incredibly helpful. I would like to talk to you first about the new book, The Story of You. It's an interesting take on the Enneagram. It's to me, I was initially expecting, oh, this is like a leveling, this is going to be like 2.0 of, you know what I mean? This is going to be like, okay, this is, I think it is, as I went through the book, but it's an interesting angle that you're approaching the Enneagram with this book. Can you go into that a little bit right out of the gate for the listener?
Sure. So the story of you, the premise of it is that all of us have a broken story. We tell ourselves and others about who we are and how we think the world works. And we crafted this story in early childhood to make sense of who we are. But sadly, our identities and our personalities emerge from these mistaken narratives, if you will. in my work with the Enneagram, you know, I've approached it in the traditional way, which is to see each of these nine types as a personality style. But one of the things I realized as a therapist working with the Enneagram is that another way to look at them, and I think a very powerful way, is to see them as nine stories, nine self-limiting, self-defeating stories that people unconsciously adopt one of them in childhood. And then unfortunately, they unconsciously drag it into adulthood where it begins to wreak havoc on their lives.
As I went through the book, one of the things that stood out, especially at the beginning, because the way the book, you know, and again, we'll get into why I had to go through more of the book maybe than somebody else who has a bit more Enneagram experience. And we'll get to that in a second. But there's a part where you talk about going from passion to virtue. And it immediately hearkened me back to the work of Cal Newport, who wrote the book So Good They Can't Ignore You, and his idea of why following your passion is bad career advice. So I started to connect some dots there, at least in my productivity-minded brain, because Cal's been on the show before, and it was very interesting advice, because most people, when they hear that, they're like, but wait a minute, we've been told, follow your passion, and that's how you live a good life. But then when if you read that book, and I don't know if you've read So Good They Can't Ignore You, he gives a really good case as to why it is bad advice. So in terms of going from passion to virtue, especially in the context of what you've written here, what you put in the book and the Enneagram, why most people would think, well, but are they, do you need to forsake one for the other? Like, what does that look like? Because, I think that passion is such a, it's been preached. I wouldn't say it's been sold a bill of goods on passion, but you know what I mean? Like there's this idea of passion, like passion is good. And I'm not saying passion isn't good, but the way you talk about going from passion to virtue, let's dive into that a little bit.
Yeah. So the word passion in the Enneagram world is different than the word passion as we understand it in, you know, typical everyday conversation. I think most of us would say, oh, passion, that's something, it's an interest that I have or a talent that I have around which I have a great deal of energy and it brings me joy and it's something I pursue wholeheartedly, right? So that's a good passion.
Right.
But the Enneagram teaches that each of us has a not so great passion. So think about when the Enneagram talks about the word passion, think of it more in terms of a crime of passion. Right. Or if you hearken from, let's say, a Christian religious tradition, we talk about the passion of Christ, all this suffering. Right. And so in the Enneagram world, we assign a passion or what's sometimes called an emotional fixation to each of the nine types. They derive from the seven deadly sins plus two. And mm-hmm. if any listener sort of objects to that on saying, oh, that's a medieval sort of Christian worldview thing, I'm always like, yeah, that doesn't make it not true, though. So for the one, it's anger. For twos, it's pride. For threes, it's deceit. And I could go through all nine types.
It's in the book. You actually outline in the book, which,
yes.
And we'll get to that in a second, too, because I'm like, okay, again, this comes back. It'll come back to the road back to me in a minute, but keep going.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, part of the journey of transformation and change, part of the journey of decoupling ourselves from the old story that prevents us from becoming the highest expression of who we are, is to let go of the negative passion that fuels the predictable, habitual negative patterns of personality that we all have, to embrace its counter, right, which is its virtue. So, if you were a Enneagram one who's got an issue with anger and resentment because the whole world isn't as concerned as you are with perfecting themselves, others, and the plight of the environment around us, then the move to the virtue would be serenity, right? Maybe like in the 12-step world, you know, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, the wisdom to know the difference. That would really help an Enneagram 1 perfectionist, right?
Right.
Improver.
Right.
So that's the journey there. That's what passion means in the context of the Enneagram, and how the virtue is like the antidote to the passion.
Okay. I, as someone who has been spending time with the Enneagram, but has not necessarily cracked the nut on what their number is. And I'm going to speak from my vantage point because that's who I am. And then I'm sure there's somebody out there that's listening right now, maybe several people that are like, yeah, I've looked at the Enneagram. I love, like, quote, and I'm going to be reductive here. Personality tests are my jam, and that's not what the Enneagram is. But you know what I mean? Like, people, they are looking, they look at these, at tests and assessments and things like that. And we're going to dive into that a little bit more as well. What I found fascinating about the story of you as I went through it is because I think our brains are somewhat hardwired to look at the bad before the good, I think this helped clarify for me maybe a bit more about what number I am than I had before I went in. So when someone might ask you the question, like, who is this book for? Or which order should they read the book in? I don't, like, your books. I don't know that it necessarily matters. And I'd love to hear from you your thoughts on that.
You know, you're the first interviewer to ask me that question. And I'm so glad you did, because I actually don't think you need to read The Road Back to You, the book previous to it, to understand the story of you, because it's just two very different approaches. And I think with the story of you, what is so has been so powerful about it in my experience is that, you know, the human brain is wired for story, for a narrative. We understand our lives as an unfolding drama, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes comedy, granted, but we think about our lives in terms of narrative. And the problem is, yes, we are Velcro for negative messages and we're Teflon for positive messages, right? That's just the way human beings, again, to use the term, are wired, okay? And I think that in the story of you, as I go through each of these nine types, what I'm revealing is the self-sabotaging, our particular self-sabotaging narrative, and how we can get out of it, mm-hmm. right? To inhabit a better, truer, life-giving story, and to confront these childhood internalized messages and beliefs that no longer serve us as adults. And I tell you what, man, I've done this work with individuals. I've done it in groups. And, the moment I say story, the moment I say broken story, that you're living in a broken story, nobody says to me, exactly what do you mean by that? I mean, it's like people just go, oh, yeah, I get it.
Yep. No. Okay. Yeah, and I get it.
And then when you tell them, guess what? You know, you have freedom and you have the power to change that story. Then they really lean in.
This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Prolon. If you've ever considered fasting for its health benefits but can't face the idea of days without food, Prolon offers a novel solution. It's a nutrition program that simulates the effects of fasting while allowing you to eat. Developed by scientists at the USC Longevity Institute, Prolon supports weight management, enhances physical performance, and bolsters gut health through a meticulously crafted 5-day meal program. This isn't just another diet. It's a lifestyle change backed by Nobel Prize-winning research, designed to trigger cellular rejuvenation and promote overall well-being. I can't wait to put it through the paces. The meals, ranging from savory soups to nutritious snacks, are all designed to ensure your body achieves a fasting state with the energy you need to maintain your daily routine. Prolon is convenient, providing everything in a single box delivered to your doorstep. I am anxiously awaiting mine. I encourage you to check out Prolon as well. If you're ready to see how Prolon can change the way you think about fasting and nutrition, then right now, Prolon is offering A Productive Conversation listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to prolonlife.com/timecrafting. That's prolonlife.com/timecrafting for this special offer. Head over to prolonlife.com/timecrafting to get started today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by Shopify. Dreaming of starting your own business or looking to take your current one to the next level? Shopify is here to make that dream a reality. As the leading e-commerce platform, Shopify empowers you to start, grow, and manage your business with ease. From setting up your online store to scaling globally, Shopify provides all the tools you need to succeed in the marketplace. Customize your storefront, manage your inventory, and connect with your customers all in one place. With direct-to-consumer pricing, same-day shipping, and a global community of entrepreneurs, Shopify supports your journey at every step. Are you ready to transform your business idea into a success story? Visit shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial and embark on your entrepreneurial journey with Shopify. That's shopify.com/timecrafting to start your free trial. Do it today. This episode of A Productive Conversation is sponsored by 1Password. Imagine a world where forgetting passwords is no longer a hassle and your digital security is uncompromised. 1Password offers a robust, intuitive solution to manage all your passwords with just one master password, safeguarding your information across every device. This isn't just any password manager. It's a comprehensive security tool that encrypts your data, ensuring only you have access. With 1Password, you can generate strong, unique passwords for each of your accounts, store sensitive information securely, and even share important logins with family or colleagues safely. Recognized by Wirecutter as the top pick for password managers, 1Password is the preferred choice for enhancing your online security without the complexity. Enhance your digital security by visiting 1Password.com. And we have a special offer for listeners of A Productive Conversation. Right now, listeners of A Productive Conversation get a free 2-week trial at 1Password.com/productive convo. That's 2 free weeks at 1Password.com/productive convo. 1Password.com/productive convo. Check out what 1Password can do for you, your business, and even your family today. Right. And I think one of the things, actually, this dovetails nicely into what I want to ask you, because as I've gone through looking at the Enneagram, and again, this is the, I think some of this, you, a lot of people take this approach, I'm generalizing here, when they're taking on any kind of like assessment, kind of, is they see examples of people. So I know that there's like, oh, this person, these are examples of ones, or these are examples of fives. And you almost try to imprint, like, oh, I want to be that person. So therefore, how can I find the commonality? And then, you know, by virtue, for lack of a better term, of that, therefore, I can be that. That's not how it works, is it? It's at all, really. But to me, I almost wonder if that like, oh, I want to be like Dave Grohl, or I want to be like Oprah Winfrey, or I want to be like that person. What I think that in and of itself can tell you more about the number that you are than what those numbers of those people are, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know what? It's really interesting. Number one, you're right. Sometimes people will say, oh, you know, Warren Buffett is a five. Or Mother Teresa is an eight, interestingly enough. Or you know, Mr. Rogers is a two. You know, you can just go on and on and on. Yeah. And of course, that actually ends up being a stereotype, like a cartoon of that type, more than it is necessarily that person's actual personality style, mm-hmm. right? And so, remember, personality is based on something none of us can see except the person who's trying to figure out their type, which is the unconscious motivation.
Yeah.
And that's just not visible on the outside. So you can say, okay, it is fun and interesting to say, oh, I think this person is that, or I think this person is something else. But yeah, usually a lot of, you know, I don't know what the percentage is, but I think a lot of the time people just get it wrong.
It takes work too, right? Like it's not, I think a lot of people, and this goes back to time, productivity, things like that, is they want the quick answer. There's no quick answer in looking inward, and especially when it comes to the story of you, is there?
No, it isn't. As you so wisely say, there's no hack in the what I would call the psycho-spiritual life of the human being, right? It's like you just have to do the work, but the work is well worth it, right?
Right.
And in fact, I would argue that if you don't do the work, then you will live a life far smaller and far less, if you will, productive, far less satisfying and life-giving than if you you know, just if you continue to ignore just how important your inner world is.
So let's get into the numbers. Let's get into the one thing I noticed, and I'm going to go backwards on this, because I went to your site. We're going to have all the links in the show notes, not just to the book, but to the tool that can help you figure out what number you might be. One of the things that comes up is the wings, right? The wings and what's the other? I'm blanking on it right now. The wing, but then there's the opposite, right? The counter to it, I think, isn't it, or something like that, where it's like the.
I think you're talking about subtypes there.
Yeah. Something, but you. One of the things that when you go to take the assessment, one of the FAQ questions is, "Well, I know what my wings are," and I was surprised by the answer there. It's like, no, because people. The wings almost in the subtypes, I don't know. To me, some people are like, they really want to have that. I mean, I looked at them like, oh, I'd be interested in that. But I also get the idea of why you might not want to do that. So why, number one, why did you, when you're looking at numbers, why are you trying to get maybe, I wouldn't say the purest, but the core number, and then not so concerned about the wing and the subsets first? And then second question, the follow-up to that is, why do you think people are so concerned about getting those things? The people that are at, like, why did that have to be an FAQ?
Yeah. So, you know, the first thing I'd say is it's really just important to figure out what your dominant type is, right? Because here's the deal. You contain all nine types. Mm-hmm. And that's why sometimes it's hard to figure out what your core type is in the beginning. You just have one that's more like you than the other eight, right? And that's a very simplistic way of saying it, but that's the truth. Now, when you start talking about wings, for those who don't know, are when you look at the Enneagram diagram, there's a number on either side of yours. So if you're a 5 on the Enneagram, there would be a 4 on one side and a 6 on the other. Mm-hmm. And what the wing is, your dominant wing, is the wing that kind of flavors you with some of that type's, you know, characteristic traits and strengths and challenges, right?
Right.
The subtype is a more complicated answer that I don't want to probably bore your audience with, right? But each type actually has 3 subtypes, right?
Right.
So just think about it this way, Mike. Your core type is just where we start, okay? And you can learn a lot about your life and who you are just on the basis of if you just chose to go no further than that, right? Now, that's a low resolution picture of your interior world, of your personality, right?
Yep.
Then once you learn your wing, now you have a higher resolution picture, right? You have more clarity. Mm-hmm. And then when you know your subtype, now you have a more 4K kind of vision of if I can use that term, of what's happening on the inside. So I think people are interested in it for 2 reasons. One is they just want more clarity, right? They want to see the distinctiveness of their particular type in more focus. Secondly, I think they do it because sometimes it's very hard to figure out your type. Mm-hmm. And particularly when you look at subtypes, can be really, really helpful. And because that's the aha moment when they read one of the subtypes, they go, boom, now I get it.
Right. So I'm going to go back to the story of you, because I've gone through the road back to you 3 or 4 times. and it's been, I've gotten closer and closer and closer. So we're going to, and the reason I asked you earlier about, like, you know, looking at it from the inverse is because when I look at, and the way this book is broken down, which I think is very wise, is to say, like, here's each story. So if you already have a sense of what number you are, then you could take a look at yours. I think the other important thing to look at is if you are of others that you know that are other numbers, looking at theirs can be helpful too. So that way you can relate to them better, right?
Absolutely.
I'm looking at the number 3 and I think I've talked to our mutual friend, Mike Pacchione, about this. Actually, while we were chatting earlier, I was looking at our text exchange from years ago, and he's like, you'd make sense as a 3. Based on, you know, what I know about you. He said, but he also said, again, I could see you as almost any number except an 8. So to your point earlier about, like, only you really kind of know. But then I looked at the story of the number 3 here and the bullet points, and there are 8 of them, I think. I'd be happier if I was more successful. If I'm not number one, I'm nothing. The world rewards doing, not being. I'm valuable when others admire me. Failure isn't an option. Image and appearance matter a lot. If you're not somebody, you're nobody. It's okay to wear a mask to win over different types of people. And my first thought was, and Keith, our producer, is going to have to bleep this out, but...
Don't bleep it out. That's a perfect response.
But that's... So... I think, like, that. Why was that the perfect response? There. Why was that the perfect response, what I just said?
Because it's the normal response when people hit their type. The Enneagram describes for you who you are at your best and who you are not at your best. It describes, it helps you understand that that which is best about you is worst about you, and what's worst about you can be best about you. And, you know, the story, the broken story of the three is supported by this mistaken belief that I'm only, as you mentioned, valuable for what I do, not for who I am inside. And at all costs, I have to be successful, appear successful, and avoid failure at all costs. Now, that story helped you as a little kid get by in the world and right. get your needs met. But it's if you don't address it and inhabit a better story in adulthood, that story will screw you.
Yeah. And I, by the way, the reason that I said, you know, that I recognized it is I've started to address it. See, I think that's the other thing too, is that, yes, as I went through the book, and again, like I said, I've gone through The Road Back to You as well. There's hints, like you said, everybody has different parts. So I was like, oh, I could be, which is why it took me so long. This book. So when I texted Mike again saying, I'm talking to Ian about his new book, and he goes, oh, Ian will be able to help figure it. The book helped me figure it out before we even jumped in the conversation. So there you go. But I mean, the idea, but there were things, again, the broken story, they're like, oh, well, that's peace. But there were less. It was really interesting to see that there were more pieces of the broken story that I recognized in the three and less in the others. And then further to that, I can look back and know exactly what some of those pieces are. Mike's not an athlete. He gets picked last. Da, 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 da. Like, there's all these things. You know, there was a bunch of the performer aspect. Oh, absolutely. You put on, I mean, I'm an actor. I did comedy. I did all that stuff. So, but I have started to address them. And as I've started to address them, to your point, I've noticed, number one, things are better. But I think more importantly, which lead to the thing, is that the story was wrong. That yes. what was going on in my head was not true at all. So, and I'd love, like, for someone who goes through this book or even like is looking at the Enneagram, they're like, I want to know what's one step, like, other than like when you go through the book, like what's one step they can take to start repairing that idea of the story. And I think, cause once you flip one page on it or change one page on it, you're like, oh, well, that wasn't as bad. I can start to alter more, multiple pages, multiple chapters, et cetera.
Great question. You know, in the book, one of the things I wanted to do was try to give people something that they could do to jumpstart the journey of, you know, jettisoning the old broken story of their lives and get started on the process of reauthoring a new story to really take responsibility for being the narrator of their own life, right? Mm-hmm. And so I use the acronym SOAR, S-O-A-R, in the book. I don't like acronyms much because they always sound like platitudes, but frankly, I know from personal experience, every now and then an acronym can help you.
Mnemonics mnemonics they work. They just do. Ooh,
they do, yeah. So the first one is C, all right? The great author Wendell Berry, he has this great quote. He says, if you don't know where you're from, you'll have a hard time saying where you're going. And so the first step of transformation of your story with the Enneagram is to see where your old story began. It's to sort of unearth the hurtful events, the unchallenged, taken-for-granted beliefs, and the unhelpful internalized messages from your childhood that continue to rule your life today. Right.
Right.
And for we all know this term, but we would call this your origin story.
Right.
Then the second step is to own right? And this is a little hard, but it's just how it goes. You know, as you know, there's no such thing as growth without discomfort. So the second step involves exploring the shadow side as well as the strength of your story and type. And what that means is to kind of inventory your life. Like, what has living in this story cost me and others? And then do I want to continue to live in it? So for you as an Enneagram 3, that unconscious motivation, the need to succeed, to appear successful and avoid failure at all costs, what does that cost your family? What does that cost your friends? What does it cost you? How has it hurt relationships? How has it possibly hurt your health? How has it held you back? What opportunities did you miss as a result of, you know, continuing to believe that lie about your life? Now, once you do that, then we go to the process of awakening. A. So once you see the old story in the past, you can kind of begin to move into the present. Like, because, you know, our old stories have a trance-like quality. We've been in them for so long. We don't even, you know, there's a quote in the book I love. It's like, it says, the prison that is most secure is the one you don't know you're in. Mm-hmm. And you've been in that old story a long time, man. And yeah. So we begin to learn mindfulness, right? Mm-hmm. The process of being able to observe your behaviors in real time, paying attention to what's happening, and catching yourself in the act of falling into the old story again, right? Yep. So that's the awaken part, right? Mm-hmm. Just wake up and see it, right? Then rewrite. Now that you've been in the past, now you've been in the present, now we're going to look into the future. What's interesting is that once you've done the seeing and the owning of that, and you've started to wake up, what's interesting is that even though it sounds passive, by the time you've cleared away so much of that debris of your old story, your new story will just begin revealing itself without you having to force it, right? Yep. It's just like the green shoots of the real story begin to reveal themselves on their own. But there are some practical things to do. Like, for example, in the book, I talk about, as I went through this process, I titled my old story, The Lost Boy. Right.
Mm, yeah. Yeah. It's interestingly, just real quick, is I just did, we're recording this in mid-January, and I finally had the bandwidth to do a 2021 year in review. Family had gone away. The kids, thanks COVID-19, were out of school a little bit longer, things like that. So I didn't have space to do it. I had time, but not space. I had both. And I sat and I went through, and there's this app I use, I love, called Reflection by Holsti. And it actually has a prompted annual review. And I journal every single day, which I think is helpful and has been helpful in this process. And at the end of the year, there's a couple things I realized. Number one, I'm way too hard on myself day to day, just way too hard. But you see it when you go back and you read 365 days worth of your story, which is what journal, to me, like, if the to-do list is the details of your day and the calendar is like the directory, then this journal is the story of your life. Like, it's just, that's what that is. But I noticed when I went through it, there was some recurring stuff, patterns. And I named 2021. It's at the end, it asks you, name one or two words that describe 2021. And you alluded to this when you were talking about the quote, which the prison quote, because it had me thinking about the movie with Andrew Garfield, Tick, Tick, Boom, where there's a song in it. One of the lyrics is, cages or wings, which do you prefer? Ask the birds. And that's the lyric. And I'm like, ugh. Like, you mentioned that. I'm like, that's exactly, because birds, what would they prefer? Of course they would prefer no cages, and have their wing. And so I titled 2021, you'd call it, the former story of the lost boy. 2021 was my year. It was called Tick, Tick, Boom. Because that movie, without giving it away, ultimately is about getting your priorities straight. That's really ultimately what it's about. It's a musical. If you don't like musicals, you're going to want to watch it. But it's really, that's what it was about. And that's what my year was about. And so to that end, you're right. Like, as soon as you do the hard work, which was going through that stuff, you're building a solid foundation, like you said, and all of a sudden you're tending the garden, you're getting rid of all the weeds, then things start to grow. So yeah, I just wanted to bring that in because it was just like the old story is so it's so hard to break, and you have to spend time with it, as uncomfortable as that is, to get a better, to get a new story, a better story.
Yes, absolutely. And I think you said it beautifully in the titling of 2021. I would ask you to do is to really even go another 100,000 feet higher.
Right.
And just tell me what the story of your life, the old story was first 20 years, 25, even up to the present day. And then what is the name of the new story you want to live? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no.
It's a very powerful exercise.
Yeah. And what I hear from people I mean, we all do this is, yeah, I went back and did an annual review. You're right. Going back is even more powerful. I read Matthew McConaughey's Green Lights book, and I've got his journal, and I'm like just hearing his story and having those records. It gives you perspective. But yeah, digging back deeper, the question is, okay, so here's a time-oriented question on that. People will say that they don't have time to meditate, they don't have time to journal, they don't have time to do all those things. How do you help someone who has that bias or that myth in their head break through that so that they can do the work that we're talking about, especially the work you're talking about, and then that way what they're doing is not for naught. You know what I mean? Because if they're doing the same things over and over again, and it's a broken story, then are they quote, really, being productive, for lack of a, like, so for someone who is saying, I don't have time to journal, I don't have time to do this work, I'm a three. Now I know, yay me. And then that's it. Like how do you help someone go from the number that they have to, okay, other than reading the book, definitely. I mean, you could see it got me to figuring out what my number is. How do you get them to say, okay, well, you need to put time into this, and here's how, like, here's where you need to do this, or here's how you can do this.
Hmm. Well, first of all, people who say that, to use sort of the language that your audience will understand, those people aren't productive. They're just busy.
Yep.
You know, there's a big difference. Right? Mm-hmm. A productive life has focus. It has direction, right? It has commitment. Busy is just oftentimes, frenetic behavior, deluding oneself into thinking that things are actually getting done at a deep level, when actually you're probably just skating around on the surface of your life. And I think also that with people like that, sometimes I just look at them, I go, okay, that's certainly your right. That's certainly your business. And I can't control you. I can't, persuade you of this. Maybe you're just not ready. So put my book on your shelf, because eventually, hopefully, something's going to happen in your life where the old story is now really strangling you, and you'll be ready to read it. That's just how people are, man. It's like politics. I don't even get into conversations where people expect me to persuade.
But you're right. Like that, it's the heckler. It's the, I've had that, right? Like, I mean, again, doing stand up and doing, again, this goes back. This again, further alludes to the three. I would be the guy that would try to convince the heckler for the longest time. There's like 40 other people in the stand up audience, or if I'm doing a workshop, even now, not now, I've been better at that over years, but I mean, In the work I do now, there'd be 20 people in the workshop, but there'd be that one person with their arms crossed going, whatever, dude. And I'd be like, I have to convince that guy, like that guy right there. And there's no convincing that person. And by giving them my time and attention and energy, I'm stealing it away from the other 20 people that are like, hey, I'm buying in. So I hear you on that. Last question before I let you go. What are you going to do when the Tennessee Titans lose to the Cincinnati Bengals on Saturday?
Oh, now we're getting down to it. Listen, I only start to watch football at this time of year because I like to have friends over for chili.
Sure.
And so I'm not a huge football fan, but, it could be the Titans' year, man.
You get Henry back and the offense is clicking. The fact that I was 16 years old the last time the Bengals won a playoff game until this year, it makes me happy enough. Like, we've got a good team going forward, but it's like, Yeah, I just, I'm like, I know where you live. And I'm a Bengals fan. And I had not for years had that helmet up. You can't see this if you're listening to this, but I have my Bengals helmet up in the background now of my desk. It's like sitting up there. I'm excited for the future of it. But yeah, I couldn't resist. So it's going to be a good game regardless, I think. I think both teams are primed to make an impact. And whoever wins, they got to go up against either Buffalo or Kansas City. So that's going to be a challenge in and of itself.
Yeah, right.
Ian, thank you so much for joining me today. The new book is called The Story of You, An Enneagram Journey to Becoming Your True Self. But I would also recommend that you pick up The Road Back to You. And to your point, these have been on my show. I mean, Road Back to You has been on my shelf for a while since I picked it up when I was in Franklin at Jeff Goins' conference. Like, I'm talking a few years ago. And
I just saw Jeff. I just spent a couple hours with Jeff yesterday.
Yeah. Love him. We've had the opportunity to hang out before at a couple of events, his event, as well as Chris Ducker's event. We both spoke at that event a few years ago and in Portland and all this stuff. Jeff's a great guy. He's been on the show before. Where can people pick up the book, and where can people, if they want to dig deeper into this journey, then where can they go to do that?
Yeah. So of course you can order it on Amazon. You can go to Barnes & Noble. You can, you know, go to your local bookseller. There's maybe a pretty good chance that you'll be able to find the book there. In terms of where they can learn more, folks can go to my website. And I'll spell it IANMORGANCRON.com. And they can learn about a course I have called Discovering You, which is an 8-hour course about the Enneagram, you know, kind of an introductory level course. They can find my Enneagram assessment that'll help them find their type. It's called the IEQ9. And they'll also learn about my podcast, Typology, on which we explore the mystery of the human personality through the lens of the Enneagram. That's our kind of script.
And the aforementioned Mike Pacchione, who I've mentioned a couple times, has appeared on that. He was on a two-parter episode, I believe, with you, wasn't he?
Yes. Yes. And, you know, my socials are at Ian Morgan Cron across all the channels.
Ian, thanks for having a productive conversation with me today. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
Again, I really appreciate Ian taking the time a couple of years ago to join me for this conversation, and I'm so grateful that I can deliver it to you once again here for this episode from The Vault. As we hit our 10-year mark of producing a productive conversation. That's right. If you use some simple math, 52 weeks in a year times 10 is 520. We have done 10 years of a productive conversation. So I'd like to thank all those that have been part of this podcast, John, Fina, Keith, who is our current producer. I want to thank everyone that's helped as part of the team over the years, Melissa, Elizabeth, Nikki, Sarah, who's my operations assistant right now, everyone who has supported the show, all the guests that have been on the podcast from beginning to now and in the future, and to all of you for listening week in and week out. I can't believe that this podcast has been around for this long, formerly as the Productivityist Podcast, and now in its new iteration as a productive conversation. And there's many more things to come. There's the PM Talk series, which is breathing some life into the podcast in a way that I didn't necessarily know that I was going to be able to do, with regular conversations with Patrick Roan. Being able to bring back conversations out of the vault has been something I've enjoyed doing. And then sharing just episodes week over week, which, if you're not already subscribed to the show, now would be a good time to do it. Wherever you get your podcast, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever, subscribe to the show, because we've been around for 10 years and we plan on being around for many more. And also thanks to the sponsors you heard on today's episode, as well as those also who have helped us out in the past. Just go to productivityist.com/podcast sponsors to check out those sponsors. That's another way to support the show. That's it for now. Thanks for putting up with the long-winded outro, but I mean, 10 years of doing a podcast, especially since I've done other podcasts before this, so it's not my first foray, but to stick with one for 10 years, wow, and millions of downloads and all that stuff. It's been quite a treat, quite a journey, and I want to thank you for listening to any of the episodes. And if you're a current subscriber, thank you for keeping up with my work. Until next week, when we're back with a shiny new episode, I'm Mike Vardy, the host of A Productive Conversation, reminding you to stop doing productive and start being productive. See you later.